It's the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Wisdom Wednesday with Professor Andrew Brandt, presented by SeatGeek. Get the app on your phone if you don't have it already. It's like Kayak for airline tickets, except tickets to events, concerts, comedy, theater, sporting events. Enter the promo code Tucker to get $20 off. Every week we have a spread the word winner. That's someone that just gives us that quick retweet or that quick like. This week's spread the word winner, none other than Derek Goodman from Nyack, New York. I noticed that he retweeted your account, Bri, the at RTF podcast account. He liked Monday's show with Andrew Hawkins. And so, which, by the way, that story is just amazing. I love stuff like that. So anyway, Derek Goodman from Nyack, New York, you are the winner. Let us know if you want the signed picture, signed card, or if you are signed up for the RossTucker.com newsletter. When I send out a story every couple months or so, you'll see the special offer that we've got coming a little bit later today. Yeah. Other than that, you guys know about the sponsor confirmation email winner. We'll be all over that as well for those of you that take advantage of any of our sponsors over at RossTucker.com. We will announce that on tomorrow's show. Other than that, it's a good day to have Andrew Brandt. A ton of stuff to get into. I mean, first and foremost, the franchise tag stuff, but even a lot of stuff other than that. It's big show time.
The big show.
Andrew, so much to talk with you about, as always. It's like they know we do an interview every week. It's unbelievable. Right. It's like all of this news is just for us. But before we even get into it, you know, we got the free agency will be here next week. A lot of people learning a lot about the salary cap. I know we'd actually had a couple listeners email me and ask if Andrew could kind of break down or detail the salary cap. And I'm guessing, or you were telling me on Business of Sports podcast, that you did exactly that?
Yeah, Ross, not only people emailing and talking to you and I, but I've gotten a lot of direct messages on my Twitter, on my email. Anyway, people reach me through Villanova, they're trying, and they just say, can you explain this stuff? And whether it be in a column for MMQB or Athletic, I thought I'd do it in a podcast. So I recorded just today a Business of Sports podcast about the cap, how it came to be, what it means, how it's changed in its calculation in the old CBA compared to the new CBA, what real deficiencies I see for players, and here's a hint, it's not going to be commissioner discipline or something like that. And really go into the details of the cap, how you get to a cap number, the way I see optimal way to manage caps compared to some teams, and then sort of get into, you know, what to look for in these contracts coming up in free agency. So I appreciate you mentioning it. The Business of Sports podcast, to me, I look at it as a pay it forward one this week where I educate, and it's kind of an evergreen one that can just tell people how to deal with the cap.
I love it. Business of Sports podcast. Make sure you check it out and subscribe. And speaking of the salary cap, Andrew, why don't we start there? The salary cap came in and is set at $177.2 million. This is the first time I can remember in a while, Andrew, where they usually give you like that. They usually give the teams like, hey, we think it's going to be around this. And it always ends up being a million or two more than that. This year, it actually came in a little under what they had told teams.
Yeah, and I don't want to go too much into it here because I explain all this on the podcast. And it really comes into the calculation that is kind of a secret sauce that even someone like me, we never really got the full explanation. Sometimes it seemed higher than it was projected, and this one seems a little lower. Now, there is a report that came out that said, well, the union and the league decided to shift some money into the player performance pool. And for people who don't know what that is, that's a pool. It's a benefit. It's not negotiable cap. It's a benefit primarily for players on minimum salaries, like low-round picks, that played a lot. So they get a bump, like a check, after the season to sort of compensate them that they were so underpaid. And the highest performers get maybe a couple $100,000 all the way down to someone like a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers that'll get maybe $80 out of this player performance pool. So, listen, if I'm the league and that's what we want to do, I'm like, yeah, where do I sign? Because the more you put into non-negotiable dollars, it's easier for the league than putting it in negotiable dollars. So the cap, I know the union's, you know, boasting that it goes up $10 million plus for the past 5 years, but went up $12 million last year and only $10 million this year at a higher number. So that is a little bit concerning that they would agree or maybe forced to agree, who knows, that the money would go into a benefit rather than the negotiable cap. Listen, no one's complaining about 177 because it was a $10 million increase. But like you said, I think we all thought it would go into 179, 180, 181, 182.
What about the fact that only five guys were given the franchise tag this year, Andrew? It feels like it's less and less, fewer and fewer every year.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I kind of joke about the negotiations that go on during the tag where you know, the DeMarcus Lawrence group or the Jarvis Landry agents will say, we really think we should get, and they're interrupted. They say, tag. Or maybe they ask for too much, and they go, tag. Or maybe they're trying to negotiate, and the team always just knows they've got that in their back pocket. I just think we don't know how many negotiations resulted out of potential tags. I would point to one for a kicker. It seems like kicker's the most used position with franchise tag. Graham Gano in Carolina, I have no doubt that they got that deal done at the tag deadline for a reason, that was something that the player wanted to avoid or whatever it was, and maybe he didn't push as hard as he could because he knew he would have the tag if he pushed too hard. But, yeah, it does seem to be less players, but then again, you know this better than I do, Ross, but maybe there's less talent on the free agent market than there have been in previous years. And that is probably teams saying, well, you know, we don't really think anyone deserves the tag. And you have that situation. Then you have a situation like the LA Rams where they had a couple different candidates and they chose to let Sammy Watkins go out into the market.
There was also the transition tag for Kyle Fuller from the Bears. You don't see that very often. It's always intriguing when it happens. Your thoughts on the Bears' usage of the transition tag for Fuller?
Yeah, you and I talk about this every year, Ross, where it was sort of – I was kind of out of the box 1 year back in the day with the Packers at a tight end named Bubba Franks, and I could never agree with his agent on what the market price was. So I basically said, okay, let's let the market decide then. And we put the transition tag on. For people who don't know, it's a right of first refusal, and the team can match. And if the team doesn't match, it loses the player. No compensation back. It just loses them. But it does set a floor. I mean, set a price. So if you think, you, the agent, and the player think you're way above what the team's willing to pay, it's a way for the team to say, okay, we'll find out. You know, we'll let the market decide. I'm surprised teams don't use it more because, you know, it's cheaper than the franchise tag. And with the franchise tag, you're never going to get two number ones back. I mean, that's unrealistic compensation. That's never going to happen. But it happened for Fuller. And my guess, Ross, is the same thing that happened with me and Franks, where they negotiated. The Bears thought there were some unrealistic expectations, and they said, we still love you. We're just going to let the market decide, and we'll see what happens with Fuller. I doubt Bears are pretty well off cap-wise. I doubt they're going to get an offer they can't match.
Right, that was kind of my read on it as well. There's been some other things I wanted to get into with you. Let's go to Stephen Ross, who initially, you know, there was a report that he was mandating that the Dolphins players would stand for the anthem, but it sounds like he was just stating a fact that it was his understanding that no Dolphins players would stand for the anthem this year, would protest the anthem or kneel.
He backed off the comments, but then I saw something late last night. There's audio. Who knows what he said, but I think it causes some consternation. And it's on the heels, Ross, of reports out of Houston, Texas, that the Texans may not consider players that have kneeled in the past in their free agent deliberations. And I think there's unreported or beneath the surface feelings maybe from other teams. I mean, listen, you have fan bases like where I was, Green Bay, Wisconsin, that have made their voices known to the Packers. Like, we don't like players that kneel. And when I was out there, and Mark Murphy talked about that on the podcast. So it's unfortunate that we're still in this time right now where owners may be being told by their business partners and their fans and their sponsors that we want players to stick to sports, and players aren't ready to stick to sports. So I guess where we are, Ross, is this is not going away. The Malcolm Jenkins coalition agreement with the league is great, but there's still players that are going to kneel and going to express opposition, and there is no rule. As everyone knows, there's no rule in the NFL requiring players to stand. That rule was not changed. That rule was not adjusted based on the agreement with the Jenkins coalition. So here we go. Another year of this. And, of course, we haven't even mentioned the genesis of it all. Colin Kaepernick, will he get signed this offseason? Who knows?
Yeah, my guess would be that that ship has sailed. I am curious, though, what would be your thoughts if an owner did mandate that the guys had to stand? I mean, you know, didn't George Steinbrenner with the Yankees mandate that they couldn't have facial hair? I mean, what are the rights of the employer in this instance?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm a sports lawyer rather than a labor lawyer. But my understanding is, you know, you have employer rules in a private association. The problem here for teams is you have a league rule. That it was a little tweet after the Kaepernick story, whatever, almost 2 years ago from the NFL saying, we encourage but do not require standing. That's the policy. So as a lawyer, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, okay, there can be no discipline if that's the policy. Then you bring in, as you said, the team owners, and if they mandate it, now we have team policy versus league policy. I would feel comfortable as a lawyer bringing a grievance for a player that wanted to kneel. I would. I think that league policy would, pardon the expression, trump team policy in this matter, just the way that the CBA trumps a lot of team rules. So I just think that's the way it would be. Now, but what we're not talking about, Ross, or what we are talking about beneath the surface is, okay, but what if teams don't sign players that have shown that in the past? Then we're back to Kaepernick and a potential grievance and looking for smoking guns.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, Andrew, is Ed Oliver, who's from Houston, University of Houston. He's an unbelievable player. They'd said he'd be a first-round pick this year. He's already declared for next year's draft. We always get to this situation. We haven't had the conversation come up in a while. But don't you think that he should be able to enter this year's draft if he wants?
Yes. I just don't think there's a magic age. And this is a legal case that I teach in my sports law classes, 2003-2004, a guy named Maurice Claret, and he won on the lower court level, but lo and behold, he got the league took it to the appellate court, where a judge named Sonia Sotomayor, who's now in the U.S. Supreme Court, ruled that the NFL could legislate the three-year rule, and that has been the end of the legal challenges. I think the important thing for people to know is, number one, this is not an NCAA rule. This is an NFL rule. Number two, the rule is only going to change through negotiation with the union. We don't know what the union's position is on players coming out early. Unions typically protect their own, right? So unions aren't really concerned about rights of college players. And that's why unions, pardon the expression, screw incoming players in their collective bargaining agreements, because they're worried about their guys, not future guys. And talking to labor lawyers, this happens way beyond sports with all other kinds of unions, where the people that are going to be members have lesser rights than the people who are there now. So this goes back to the one-and-done rule in the NBA. Is that going to change the three-year rule in the NFL? I think it came about when Gene Upshaw just kind of said, can you imagine these 18-year-olds running into Ray Lewis? I remember that a long time ago. And I'm like, well, some could. Most can't, but some could. And I agree with you. I think it's incredibly an arbitrary rule. And this player you're talking about could do that. And this brings up the question we can talk about going forward in future podcast, future discussions, which is, well, should they sit out? Should that player spend the year at an IMG rather than playing? And we've talked about this with Jadeveon Clowney back in the day, and we talk about it with players like McCaffrey and Fournette skipping bowl games. The logical extension is that could happen. So we may be getting there.
Andrew, always enjoy our conversations, and I enjoy the Business of Sports podcast. I love it. A little salary cap 101 for people so that they're all caught up as we head into free agency. Thanks so much for doing the Business of Sports each week, and thanks so much for coming on the show each week.
Always a pleasure, Ross.
By the way, I forgot to mention, I should have told you guys this right from the start, apologize for the college draft not coming out yesterday. We had some issues with Fran's schedule, so we weren't able to do the college draft yesterday. That is out now, so you can now listen to the college draft podcast, which is awesome, breaking down the combine like only Fran can. If you wanted a recap of the only things you really need to know from the combine, Fran was all over it, which reminds me also, by the way, for any of these shows, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, hopefully you've all given them all a shot, number one. And number two, if you ever have anything that you'd like to advertise, that you'd like to get in front of thousands of people, I'd be happy to, you know, send you our audience, send you the numbers and stuff like that. So again, ross@rostucker.com. If you or if you know a buddy or somebody that has a company that you think would be perfect to get out to all of the Tuck heads all over the world, certainly let us know, ross@rostucker.com. Let's roll, Bri.
Tuck's Takes.
All right, Ross, lots to get to today, including some of the stuff you already touched on with Andrew. But let's start with the fallout from the franchise tag. Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, Rams DB LaMarcus Joyner, and Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence joined the previously tagged Lions Ziggy Ansah and Dolphins Jarvis Landry. Also, Kyle Fuller from the Bears, he got the transition tag.
Right, and Andrew and I talked about that. I don't know that there's any real big surprises here. I guess what's interesting is that the Rams, it came down to, for them, you know, both LaMarcus Joyner and Sammy Watkins, they elected to tag Joyner. His number's lower. He's more valuable. That makes a lot of sense to me. Jarvis Landry, of course, is up for trade. Steelers' Le'Veon Bell continues to just befuddle me in terms of his business acumen. It's not real good. There's just no other way to describe it. I mean, he's never going to get what he thinks he should or what he wants, and instead he's actually, A, leaving money on the table, and B, he's actually hurting the running back position more than helping it. You know, because if he established himself at a good $12 million per year with $39 to $42 million, you know, in the first 3 years, that would really do a lot for running backs. But that's not what he's doing. He's going to end up going to the market next year with a lot more tread on his tires. It's a shame in my mind. But look, everybody's free to make their own decisions in life. As for Kyle Fuller and the transition tag, Andrew and I touched on that. Really interesting. Clearly they made a mistake by not putting the fifth-year option on him. I would say when in doubt, put the fifth-year option on people. As for Fuller, yeah, I don't think he'll get an offer sheet. If he does, I think the Bears would match it anyway. Teams usually don't like doing that, so I don't really envision that happening. And they get him at a minimum for this year for less and then the franchise tag, and they can continue to negotiate with him. They don't have that hard July 15th deadline.
Tux takes.
All right, so that also means that some decent names didn't get tagged, like Rams wide receiver Sammy Watkins, Seahawks D lineman Sheldon Richardson, and most notably from the Jaguars, Allen Robinson.
Right, so kudos to the Rams and the Seahawks for understanding the concept of a sunk cost. And just because you gave up a second-round pick and a player for these guys doesn't mean you slap them with the franchise tag just so you can keep them for at least another year, just so that that trade looks quote-unquote better. You need to make the decision now based on where you're at now, not based on what happened before. And by the way, both these guys should get a lot of money, which is the equivalent of a third-round compensatory pick. So really it would be, you know, they moved down a round and gave up a player for a year of these guys. E.J. Gaines in Sammy Watkins' case, Jermaine Kearse in Sheldon Richardson's case. I will say this, looks like in hindsight a really good trades by the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets, that's for sure. The Allen Robinson one, I don't understand, Bri, because it's like, if you signed Blake Bortles to a de facto one-year deal, not making sure he has Allen Robinson this year doesn't make sense to me. Like, I thought that they thought, okay, let's see if Blake can build on that, and we'll make sure he has Allen Robinson, who he's had success with in the past, and that combo, that'll help. Like, that makes sense to me. What they're doing, if Allen Robinson leaves, that does not make sense to me.
Tux takes.
Some other news include the Falcons and the Panthers. They both kept their kickers. Bills signed running back Chris Ivory, and the salary cap is now set at $177.2 million.
So Andrew and I talked about that. It's a little bit less than I think what people thought. Usually they say 178 being conservative, and ends up being a million or two more than that. This year it was actually a little bit less than that. So, you know, it's not that much money, but that probably surprised some of the folks around the league. Chris Ivory, the Bills wanted to make sure they had another back behind LeSean McCoy. I don't know why they didn't make sure they had one last year, but Ivory is a banger. He's a very different type of runner than LeSean McCoy, so that makes sense to me. You know, sort of a thunder and lightning, if you will, to have different speed pitches that you can throw at the defense. And as for the Falcons, the Panthers keeping their kickers, kickers do not like the franchise tag. Kickers know that their position, there's not a lot of security there, and one bad year, they'll move on from you, and you won't have that much of a market. Those guys like getting that upfront money and the money that's, you know, 3 or 4 years, some money in the year two or a bonus up front. Those guys know how hard it is to get one of those 32 jobs in the NFL.
Tux takes.
Well, next year we are not going to see Ed Hockley, Jeff Triplett, Antonio Cromartie, and likely defensive end Aldon Smith. The first three of those that I mentioned retired, but Smith was released by the Oakland Raiders.
Aldon Smith, just a mess. It's really a shame. You know, he's involved in something bad again, you know, where he was arrested and accused of domestic abuse. It's just, it's a real shame. He had very, he was a heck of a player, had a promising start to his career and a chance to make all kinds of money and be financially set. But obviously he's got some demons that he can't get past. Fred Hockley, I tweeted this yesterday, Bri, at Ross Tucker NFL. Probably I didn't mention it at the start of the show, facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. But it's so funny that in the last like 3 to 5 years, when you watch college football, even to some extent college basketball, but especially college football, you know, these fake Ed Hockleys are popping up everywhere. These guys that lift weights, they're proud of how they lift weights. They've got some big arms, and so they're wearing tight referee outfits. It's just kind of funny to me, really funny. And Cromartie, I saw where – I think he played 11 years in the NFL. I saw where he said he played 27 years of football. I mean, think about that. That is a long time since he was like 5 or 6 years old.
Tux Takes. All right, finally, what are your thoughts on Stephen Ross's comments and Houston D-tackle Ed Oliver's announcement that he's going to turn pro next year?
Well, I understand. Stephen Ross was not saying it was a mandate. Stephen Ross was just saying, I think that based on his understanding, none of the Dolphins were going to take a knee this year. I don't think he was mandating it. He has been as out in the open as much of a supporter of social justice causes as anyone. So I don't really, you know, in my mind, I was surprised that he was the first one to supposedly have a mandate. That was what jumped out to me, which is not, evidently not the case. He just was making the comment that none of the Dolphins players were going to take a knee next year. As for Ed Oliver, I mean, I could do a whole podcast on this. The Houston D-tackle who's already announced he's going to go. He should be able to be in this year's draft. He'd be a first-round pick in this year's draft. He'd get that financial security. You know, he doesn't need to be there getting in school when he realizes he's not really going to graduate. You know what I mean? I mean, he's going to be 2.5 years, trained for the combine and stuff, go to the NFL as a first-round pick. It's just, I am not a believer that you limit one person's ability to make a living because you're worried about potentially poor decisions by other people. You know, everybody has to take personal responsibility and accountability for their lives, including you, when it comes to your health and what you're sleeping on. That's why almost everybody I know now gets Casper beds. People like my buddies will text me, what's your Casper code again? It's casper.com/Tucker, and then using Tucker at checkout, you get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Tucker. Terms and conditions apply, of course. The best part about it, well, there's a bunch of different best parts about it, right? But in my mind, you're able to get a 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Brian has one and loves it. My in-laws have one and love it. My daughter, my older daughter, every night when I lay in her bed and read to her, I am on a Casper mattress. It is awesome. There's all kinds of different options. They ship it right to your door, so you are cutting out the middleman, so to speak. Just look at all the reviews online. It is absolutely awesome. I have yet to talk to someone that doesn't really like their Casper mattress. Again, get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Tucker and using Tucker at checkout.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Email address ross@rostucker.com.
That's it.
What do you got, Bri?
Hey, Ross, thank you. Greetings and salutations, Ross and Brian. Several times in the past, Ross, you have got into some details about the O-line, and since almost all people don't know how to read O-linemen, and even those of us that know quite a bit don't know enough, can you share more on what to look for? For example, I think I know what you mean by smooth movement being a key component, but can you elaborate? Can you explain how to defend against various D-line moves and what those moves on both sides entail? Are O-linemen taught speed to power and power to speed on purpose, or is this just a byproduct of other training? Is it taught on purpose? What sorts of methods are used for such? Thanks so much. That's from our good friend Jason Montgomery.
Jason Montgomery, he's like that. He's like one of the head of the tuck heads. I love it. Thank you, Jason. Amazon. He took advantage of the Amazon banner ad. So speed to power is more of a defensive line technique where they get up the field so that the offensive tackle is going backwards quickly to try to meet them at the junction point. You know, so he's kind of getting back, and they're getting they're going up the field fast so that you have to go back, and then they try to time it just right. So they put that foot in the ground and come and bull rush you while your momentum and your weight is already going backwards. So they've built up all of this speed just to run into you and try to knock you backwards. So that's speed to power, and it can be very effective. You know, some of the things to watch when you watch offensive line play, okay? Not only smooth movement, like you can kind of tell if someone is light on their feet as they slide back and forth. If someone, when they're running, looks athletic, looks natural as a runner. The other things, though, would be just how quickly they change it. They change direction with their feet. You know, how effortless is it for them to change direction? Watch their hands. Are their hands inside? You always want to get your hands inside. And probably the biggest thing, Jason, that you want to watch for is just balance. You know, how often are they in balance? How often are they out of balance? How often are they up on one leg versus, man, he looks really, really like he's in balance there? It's a good question. I mean, look, we could do a whole podcast on that one too. But in general, those are the things that I would look for. A guy that is an easy mover, slides naturally, looks athletic when he's running, but really is in balance and keeps his hands inside, doesn't lunge forward, keeps his weight back. Those are some of the things that you can look for. That'll do it, by the way, for a Wisdom Wednesday edition of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Appreciate those emails like Jason, because that means you're taking advantage of some of our sponsors, like the Amazon banner ad or like Casper.com/Tucker, if you or anybody you know is in the market for a mattress. Twitter, Facebook, those things are awesome. Please download the next podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to not only this podcast, but the other ones. That would be much appreciated. Those of you that are subscribed as well to the Fantasy Feast, Even Money. We've got new episodes coming out of those today as well. We got a busy, busy Wednesday here on the RT Media Network. Other than that, I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.